Chefs Without Restaurants, episode 61 with Mike Tholis.
I never loved the CSA model. I have a hard time selling something to people that they're locked into, like a gym membership. I don't feel honest doing that. I know it's a great way for farmers to make money and, you know, to get the money up front and all that. I just, if you don't like it, you don't get a choice. If you go away on vacation, you lose your share. Like, I just can't sit there and look somebody in the face and say, yeah, well, you know, that's the, it's a commitment. You got to deal with it, blah, blah, blah.
This is the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast with your host, Chris Spear. Each week, I'll be speaking with food entrepreneurs and people in the culinary industry. If you're interested in learning more about our organization dedicated to helping people build and grow their food businesses, look us up on the web at chefswithoutrestaurants.com and .org and on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Chefs Without Restaurants. Now, enjoy the show. Hey, listeners, how's it going today? So on this week's podcast, I have Mike Tholis. Mike's the owner of Rendezvous Farm in Frederick, Maryland. Before farming, Mike was a chef in DC restaurants for 5 years, and he also worked as a butcher. You know, he was working in DC during the government shutdown in whenever that was, 2018, and at the time saw how fragile the restaurant industry could be. And it was then that he started thinking about, you know, maybe the restaurant business wasn't for him. And he started looking at things to do and decided to start this farm. Now, with COVID and everything, you know, you really get to see how fragile the industry actually is. This has been going on a lot longer than the government shutdown did. So, you know, it seems that Mike maybe made the right choice. So in this episode, we discuss leaving the restaurant business, his CSA model that he's doing that I think is pretty cool, pros and cons of farmers markets, and why he doesn't really want to be selling his products to restaurants. We also talk about, you know, work-life balance and a lot of things just around issues in the restaurant industry and why it's not for everyone. So I hope you really enjoy this. And as always, let me know if you have any feedback and if you'd like to review the show, we'd love that. Thanks so much and have a great day. All right. Welcome, everyone. This is Chris with the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast. And today I have Mike Tholis. Mike was a restaurant chef in DC for 5 years and worked as a cook and butcher before that. He decided to then leave restaurants and start a small market farm here in Frederick, Maryland. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. This is cool.
Thanks for coming on. Yeah, I really wanted to talk to you about the farm and how it's going, but also the transition from being a cook and a chef to working on a farm. So I guess that probably is a great place to start. Like, tell me a little bit about your background cooking and what you were doing.
Yeah. So I was, I was the type of cook that was all in on everything. I started when I was 20 and, you know, just worked 60, 70 hours a week as you do. And just wanted to be the best person in the room, best person in the town. Then I moved to DC and wanted to be, you know, a chef at one of the best restaurants. So I did that. And it was all consuming and all great, but it really takes over your entire life. And I really was starting to burn out in a big way on just the whole restaurant scene. And I'm kind of one of the typical, like, I got chewed up and spit out by the restaurant industry. Just as it kind of happens, it takes time and it just beats you up. And, so I think when I left my main job that I had in DC, as chef de cuisine, and then I was kind of in between and I was at a restaurant that I liked, but I wasn't in love with. And then the government shutdown happened, whatever year that was, 2018, when it was like 3 months or month and a half of no, you know, the government employees didn't work, and restaurant business dropped 40% overnight and stayed down. And then, you know, it was like, man, this is a really fragile kind of existence. Like, you know, we're talking about laying people off. We're like, we don't know how long we can do. Like, we're hoping for the government to reopen. Obviously everybody was, but we got numbers to make and we got people to make sure that we can keep in business. And so that was just like a real eye opener for me. Just like, I don't know if I'm comfortable with such a precarious situation, like being my livelihood. And I kind of started branching out. I had always kept a garden. And so I was like, you know, maybe I can YouTube this and see if I can learn about farming, because I had always been going to farms. The local was like how I sourced for my restaurants, and so I really wanted to kind of go down that road. I was jealous of the farmer's lifestyle, and so that, I, you know, in a nutshell, is kind of how it was. And right now, I'm pretty stoked on my decision because it's been a kind of a crazy year for restaurants, and farming's kind of had a whole revolution in and of itself this year. So I'm, you know, just kind of rolling with it right now.
Did you go all in all at once? Like, did you just stop working and start planting like right away? Or was there a transition where you were trying to figure out what you were going to do?
Oh, that's a good question. So I got my land settled out in like the end of August, 2 years ago now. And so I basically was working as a chef de cuisine, but the restaurant was kind of casual, and I was working like, you know, to me, it felt like part-time, 45 to 50 hours a week. And on my days off was when I would sort out the farm. So I'd go and I'd like till the ground, or I'd cover it with like silage tarp to kind of kill off some weeds and start there. And then over the winter on my days off, I would go up and like build out my pack shed and infrastructure in there. Yeah. So, and then, end of February, I called it with restaurants and started, and I just went all in at that point. So I wasn't planting anything the first half a year, just like prepping ground and getting ready to go. And then that March is when I quit restaurants. I said, I can't do anything like halfway. I have to go all the way. So it has to be financially, like I need it to work, or I just will get lazy and won't do it. So I just went all the way in, and, you know, haven't really looked back. I had to work in restaurants this past year. First season was good, but can always be better. So this past winter I worked in a restaurant in DC just to pay the bills. And then this year I moved to Frederick and have been kind of, I mean, it's been great this year. I'm kind of a social distancer anyway. So COVID hasn't really affected me in that personal life kind of situation. And for business, it's been a really interesting time.
So who is your ideal customer? Has that changed over time? I mean, are you marketing towards restaurants, consumers at home, or a bit of both? And has any of that changed due to COVID?
Yeah, so COVID's been a really interesting time in the small farming scene because, you know, kind of farming had its like ways that you did it. Like even in the small market farm scene where like you either sold exclusively to restaurants, exclusively at farmers markets, or some kind of combination of both, or a CSA. I never loved the CSA model. I have a hard time selling something to people that they're locked into, like a gym membership. I don't feel honest doing that. I know it's a great way for farmers to make money and, you know, to get the money up front and all that. I just, if you don't like it, you don't get a choice. If you go away on vacation, you lose your share. Like, I just can't sit there and look somebody in the face and say, yeah, well, you know, it's a commitment. You got to deal with it, blah, blah, blah. So I was never really on board with that. So last year I spent most of my time and energy in like restaurant sales and at farmers markets. I did 2 delivery days to restaurants and I did 2 farmers markets a week. And I was, you know, it was busy. It was a lot of sales time and not a lot of groundwork time. So I had kind of revamped and I was going to do a CSA this year, just a little bit, just to kind of get the season started. And then I was going to kind of do the same thing. And then COVID happened, or started, I guess, or whatever you want to say. And I called my chef that was like my main customer last year with ramps, because it was like March 15th. I go on a big ski trip and I came back, and that weekend was the first, you know, those ramps were just getting to be like small size ramps that you could, you know, sell and do stuff with. Texted him, or I called him and he didn't answer. I texted him and he like basically told me to never talk to him again. Because, you know, whatever, because his problems were more important than my problems. And I just moved to Frederick. I had no money. It was the end of the winter. And I was like, I'm just trying to keep my lights on. Like, I don't know what to do. So I had to sit down and like basically rework everything overnight and kind of settle on the idea is like, if this thing is going to be real, which obviously now looking back, it obviously was going to be, I can't count on farmers markets and I definitely can't count on restaurants. Going back to the CSA model that I don't like, I opened my CSA more or less like an online store. So a CSA member pays and gets a gift card to my online store ahead of time, and then they use that gift card to just purchase each item each week how they want it. So if they don't like okra, for example, which is a big one that people don't like, they don't have to have it. Or if they go on vacation, they don't have to lose their money. So they can get whatever they want every week, or nothing, or whatever. So it really, it's basically just pay ahead of time and then shop online with me, which has been really great. It's been a lot of fun to kind of work out the kinks of. And then the way it is now, I go and, like I did at your house, I do a no contact delivery where I just leave the bag on the porch and send a text and say, hey, it's here. I'm back in the car. Like, thanks a lot. Like, hope you enjoy everything. And that way you get your groceries basically delivered to your house, and then it's in a safe manner. So in today's age, that's kind of like, I think, what people need or what people want. I don't know. That's what I would want if I went to the grocery store.
I got a bag of produce from you, and that was really awesome. You sent me a text and said, produce is here. It's on your doorstep. Yep. You know, just open the door and there it is, and put it away. I love that idea of the gift card. I've never heard of anyone doing that. Are there other farms that are doing that you know of? Because I think the biggest thing is the selection. You know, people joke all the time. Like I was just telling you before we got on here that I just got some produce and it was kohlrabi. And that seems to be the thing people always joke about. Like my friends who aren't chefs always say, oh, my CSA came today and I got 5 pounds of kohlrabi. What do I do with that stuff? And most people don't even want to use it. I mean, I love it. But that idea that you're always giving the consumer something that they don't necessarily want or know how to use.
Yeah. So I got the idea of, it's just like a farm that I listen to, a podcast that I listen to is called the No-Till Market Garden Podcast, and really fantastic. I believe they're in Kentucky. And they got the idea of a market card where basically the CSA is tough, because not only for that, but like you said, like if you get 5 pounds of kohlrabi and half your other crops have too much bug damage to sell or whatever, then, you know, you're looking at 5 pounds of kohlrabi and like a pound or two of lettuce, and like that's what's in your CSA share. And you have to constantly stagger this like perfect basket each week. And it takes a whole lot of planning. And then people get tired. They don't want fennel 2 weeks in a row. They want fennel 1 week and then like, you know, whatever the next week. So you kind of have to have this constantly revolving produce coming out. And so this way, this allows people to like try a little bit of something if they want, but if they don't want to, or they know they don't like it, it's not a big deal. And then it's been really great. People have been really excited about it, and I'm happy to do it. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. I could see the pull as a farmer to want to do the full CSA model, where it's just like, I'm going to grow all this and then you guys are just going to take it. But to me, that's too producer friendly and not consumer friendly enough. And in this day and age, like I'm trying to pull customers from like, you know, Yes Organic Market. Like I'm trying to pull people from like organic sections of grocery stores. That's my customer, not necessarily the, you know, I shop at Giant and I want whatever. Like I want somebody who's conscious, I want it to be easy for them too. Like I don't want them to be like, have to go out on too far of a limb to order from me. It's like online shopping, which we can all do these days, and it's grocery shopping kind of combined.
And I guess the home customer is maybe a little less adventurous than say chefs are, you know. The kind of things that I would want in a CSA or would know how to use are probably not the things that are going to sell if you're pushing towards a home market. I'm assuming right now, you know, like everyone wants tomatoes, everyone wants lettuces, everyone wants that kind of stuff.
But right.
Maybe not the fennel. I mean, I would gladly take a bunch of fennel every week, but I know a lot of people who wouldn't use it once.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. And it's hard for me. And it's been really humbling for me, honestly, because as a chef, I'm like, all these ingredients are awesome all the time. I want them in my life. And then you got to realize that people don't know about these things and don't, you know, really care to, not that they don't care to, but if they're outside of the comfort zone and they're cooking at home, they're not here. It's not like us, like in a restaurant or in your business, trying to like push yourself a little bit or anything like that. Like other people have lives and they're busy and they just want their groceries at the end of the day, and they have the recipe that they like and they're going to produce it and like all that. And so, but then again, I do grow the fennel and I do grow the kohlrabi and, you know, I don't know if eggplant's weird or not, but people do, they have their chances to try it. And if they like it, then great. And if not, like, you know, no worries. So I'd say yes, the average consumer is a little bit less adventurous, but it's also great because it's a much more forgiving market as well. So like if I run out of something, it's not the end of the world. Like the chef doesn't have to scramble to like put the dish together with something else. Like it's like, oh, okay, oh, no worries. Like cherry tomatoes will come next week or whatever it is. Like now I'm not running out of cherry tomatoes, but it might be like scallions or carrots or something that I put too many bunches on the website and they sold like crazy. And I'm like, I'm like 5 bunches short. And the people are usually like, that's not a big deal, which is kind of nice for my anxiety levels. So
have you grown specific things for restaurants? Like if a chef asks for something, have you grown that? Or is that something you're thinking about doing? And I know the restaurant scene is really weird right now, but ideally, is there a scenario where you'd start custom growing for restaurants because they want red beets or yellow beets or something like that?
Honestly, I don't know that I want to go back to mainly restaurant sales. I don't like, you know, farming is a lot of work and growing is a lot of work. And a couple things, like I'm on super small acreage. I grow on less than just a bit more than a half an acre total. So I can't afford to like waste, like a lot of chefs like to say, I want celeriac. And I'm like, okay, it's 120 days to maturity, which means it's put it in May and it's ready in October. And so that's kind of the equivalent of like, you have a 2-top that's sitting in a 4-top for the entire night. Right. So like, you don't have, you're not turning that high revenue table over for the whole year or the whole night. And then, so you're just wasting money on a $60 ticket or wasting time in the seats. Whereas like for me, it's just, you know, it's time and area that the craft takes that is my revenue share. So I try to keep it interesting. I try to do chef oriented vegetables a little bit, but for the most part, I'd rather deal with people and at home for that reason. And for plus I can grow less and, you know, it retail groceries cost more money. Chefs want to pay $4 a pound for bush beans, which are a massive amount of work. And I'm like, I can't make this happen. This is a ton of work. I don't have the time for this. And $4 a pound is peanuts for this. Like I basically take farmers market prices and sell everything at that. And it's been great for me. I'm not like, I'm not rolling money, but I'm working hard and being compensated for it, which is, I think, all we can ask for.
And so does that mean the customers have been pretty good about pricing? Because I do know obviously stuff that's, you know, of your quality and coming from local farms does cost more than say commodity carrots at a grocery store. Right. So have there been comments or discussions about cost and pricing with customers, or are people kind of used to it at this point?
Well, my customers tend to not care as much. I have had one run in with a customer. I also buy produce and like groceries kind of items like flour and eggs from the Amish in Pennsylvania. Kind of to supplement the website. And I tell everybody that this is theirs and whatever their methods are different than mine and blah, blah, blah. But they, I was buying rhubarb because everybody wanted rhubarb in April. Rhubarb is expensive. And to make it worth my time, I have to mark it up. And then one customer like complained about it and he was measuring each bunch and said he was like half an ounce short on this bunch. And I'm like, you live in a $1.2 million house and you're hitting me about a half an ounce that's worth like 50 cents. And so like, I was like, I don't really have the time for this, like, honestly. But, you know, so no, for the most part, no, my customers don't care that much. Food in DC is expensive in general. Like half a gallon of the milk that I buy at the grocery store is almost twice the price in DC as it is in Frederick now, which is, it's just insane. So I think it's stuff is expensive and people think it is cheap sometimes. So like, I don't know. It's for me, it's just the customer dictates the market and I'm not trying to overprice anything. I just want to make it fair.
So you're in Frederick and you live in Frederick, right?
Yeah. I live in downtown Frederick.
Now you're selling into DC. You're like, what's your range of how far you're selling your product?
So I try to keep it. I'd love to sell more into Frederick. I struggle with the Frederick market at this point. But it's getting better. But then, yeah, generally speaking, I target all of Washington, D.C. and Arlington, Alexandria, and then like Bethesda, Silver Spring, Rockville area. So I have a pretty broad range. And then, yeah, I do 2 delivery routes a week based on who orders, and I just go to their house and drop it off. But, yeah, as long as you're not too far east or west and not farther south than like, I go all the way down to like Mount Vernon. Not farther south than that, then I'll probably stop at your house. Like, I have a customer who is a CSA member in Durwood. I have one in Rockville. I have one in or two in Silver Spring. I have a customer who I love. She's a great customer. And in Hyattsville, which is pushing it for me for like out of the way on the east side. But, you know, she's been a great customer, so I can't fault it. I'm just got to take it where it is right now.
So how are you finding those people, or how are they finding you? I mean, DC, you would think you'd be able to get so much great stuff locally. So how are they finding you out in Frederick? Is it from existing relationships because you used to work in DC, or just you're good at marketing, people know you have the best stuff? How's that working?
Yeah, good question. I don't think I'm very good at marketing. That's been probably the biggest hurdle this year, is like, how do I not stand somewhere or walk into a restaurant or approach somebody with a flyer and say, hey, this is what I do, like, you should come to my website. So every month or month and a half, I send out a survey to my customers just to see like what they're feeling and kind of a couple questions about how they got to know me. And the main answer is an Instagram ad. So I pay a little bit for the promoted posts, and you can target a specific age group, gender, interests, whatever on Instagram, and range from whatever address you want to put in, it goes to their Instagram, it comes up. And so I got a lot of customers that way. I have a few really great customers who are really much better at social media than I am. And they're constantly reposting and tweeting things and whatever it's called, talking about food on the internet. And that is really nice. And I mean, that's pretty much the main of it. I have a couple customers that I knew from restaurants, and they're great. And I love to see them. I talk to them through their windows and like, you know, we catch up a little bit. But yeah, mostly it's people who found out about me through their neighbors, or some people found me just like Googling delivery CSAs, but mostly it's the Instagram ads.
Sounds like we have a lot of parallels with our business. You know, I'm based in Frederick here, and almost most of my business is Northern Virginia, DC, yeah, all that. I mean, I think some of it's market economics, but the same thing. I was very successful. I mean, you take a photo of a dish and post on Instagram, and even pay to run some ads. And then once you get that following, you know, now I'm not spending really anything marketing wise for money, because I just have that client base who now they're just telling their friends, they're posting on Facebook, and it's really nice when you don't have to pay for marketing as much.
Yeah, I'm sure. And their friends might've been at the dinner that you were doing. Now they're hosting a party. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I have, that's kind of a main thing. It's just hard these days because people aren't having those parties as much or really that much at all. And, you know, with groceries, I think it's a different kind of thing. Like, especially if you're not having people over, like, where'd you get that zucchini isn't like the conversation you're having. So I do like a referral program within my customers. Like, hey, if I get a new customer and they drop your name, like, I'll give you a $10 coupon or whatever, just to kind of like incentivize people to like call their friends. I'm like, hey, I got this great stuff from this great farm. Like, you should check it out. And I've gotten a few customers that way, but yeah, it's been a really interesting study in marketing this year, because it's just a whole new world for me. Last year, the farmer's market does all the marketing. So you just go and you pay for the stand and then like the space, and you just go and you set up and people come by and they buy your stuff and they go home.
What do you think of farmer's markets? I know right now some are open, some are not. Do you think they're worth the time, or is there a better way to market your product?
So I don't know. So I love my farmer's market and I'd love to go back. But I'm a super small operation, and I can't do both. Like, it would be really a challenge for me to do my delivery model and do the farmer's market. And I do love the farmer's market. I love that face-to-face, or, you know, in the past I did. But this year I had to scrap it, mostly just because I think it's irresponsible for me to offer a no-contact, safe delivery to my customers and then stand face-to-face with 50 strangers every week. It doesn't add up to me as, like, a safe kind of equation. So I haven't been doing it. They're very sweet there, and I'm invited back next year, and I want to go back next year if the world stops ending or whatever. But again, I don't know. It's also really nice. The farmer's market takes 10 hours of your time. You lose a lot of product because you never sell out. You have like 20 to 30% left, like the pick through stuff sitting on the table. And it's just a lot of work. So I don't know. And plus, if it rains, it's no good. If it's hot, it's no good. If it's windy, it's no good. Like, there's a lot of variables where, like, you know, it's kind of sad to say, but the online world is, like, just more efficient. As much as I love the face-to-face and selling and the open market of it all, like, it's just way more efficient what I'm doing right now. So hopefully next year I can get into it again. But, you know, if not, it will be for a reason, because it's more profitable or more economic or more fun to do something different.
I've said the same. It's like doing events at, or, you know, like having a table at an event. You know, all these people have, oh, we're having this such and such festival. Do you want to come and have your food there? And it's never done anything for me for business. Even if I'm given the option to sell something, like the time commitment to stand at a table and sell your pimento cheese and business cards, it's just like, I could have saved that money and put it into a marketing budget, done so much more at home. I've found I never get leads out of that kind of thing. It's just not worth the time.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing. I don't know. Farmers markets are cool. That's one of the main reasons I wanted to get into farming, is because I love farmers markets so much, and I love being there and the environment and all that stuff. But it's just a lot of time. Like, it's just packing all that stuff takes a lot of time. And then loading the car, getting down there, unloading the car, setting up, you know, tap dancing for the customers, and then breaking down, loading the car back up, getting back to the farm, unloading the car. It's like a 10 to 12 hour day, and could just be a rainy, crappy day. So it's still the same amount of work. So I don't know. Now it's like every once in a while I have a slow day. I only have like 25 stops on my route, and it'll be like, all right, I guess I just have a lighter day today. And I'll just take it for what it is and move forward. But obviously, I don't want too many of those days. But it's pretty nice to be able to be like, it's just less work to not be as busy sometimes. So I can just kind of take an early evening.
So you're always a season ahead or two sometimes, I guess. What are you doing right now? Like, what's going in the ground? What are you thinking about for late summer, fall? Like, what's the growing looking like for you right now?
Right now, it's crazy. It's right. So this is like the linchpin moment. It's like, you know, you think September, it's like, okay, well, we can plant all this stuff. But if you don't have stuff in, like, rooting vegetables in the ground by like the end of next week or maybe the week after, they might not size up by November, because as this daylight kind of diminishes each day, the plants grow slower and slower and slower. So right now, I mean, tomatoes are just coming on the full swing. For me, I don't have a tunnel, and we had two super late frosts in Frederick, like May 15th and 14th and 15th. I think it was like 28 degrees at night, both nights. So I didn't have my tomatoes in the ground because I saw that that was coming and I just waited. I don't have the equipment to like keep it warm while I'm not there. And so my cherry tomatoes are just now, it's, what is it, the last day of July almost. And they're just now in full swing, which is, you know, 3 weeks late for me. But yeah, now it's like I'm seeding a bunch of fall crops. So like carrots and radishes, and I have a greenhouse full of kale and scallions and Swiss chard and beets and lettuce and that sort of thing that are going in the ground in a couple of weeks. But yeah, for the most part, it's those sorts of things, back to the salad-y kind of like leafy, rooty kind of vegetables. And that's kind of my bread and butter anyway. I really like the kind of high turnover, quick kind of things like spinach and that sort of stuff. So that to me is a lot of fun to grow, and it's a lot of fun to eat. And, you know, it's nice. I love tomatoes, don't get me wrong. And shishito peppers, those are coming in full force now. And eggplants are about to start. And I love all of it, honestly. But I just, right now it's like summer veg is full on, and it's like, got to plan for fall or you're screwed. Now through like September 1st is like the real like churn and burn kind of, like, you're planting and harvesting big time every day.
And what does winter bring for you? What do you do all winter long?
So this past winter was my first winter, and I worked as a butcher at a restaurant, which I hope to never do again. But, you know, it was nice. I got the opportunity to train a lot of people who didn't know anything or very little and just were eager to learn. So that was really nice. But I've learned that I'm too burnt from the restaurants to do it again. So, this year I've been saving, scraping pennies, and my goal is to have, you know, enough money to pay my rent, which downtown Frederick is not DC, but it's not free either. So pay my rent for the 3.5 months, and also to basically just like kind of cruise around. I have my delivery van is also like my car. So I'm basically just going to van camp for as long as I can afford to, visit some folks. Like my brother's down in Louisiana, friends out in Wyoming. I want to hit like Southern California to like get some summer in without working. But yeah, so that's kind of my plan. It's my hopelessly romantic, I'm going to live in my van and have a great time plan, but who knows how it's going to go.
No big side hustle for you and just take a little time off.
Yeah, that's my whole point in this. Like I would rather work super hard for 9 months and just chill super hard for 2 months than when I got my last restaurant chef job. I was like, the chef would sit me down and he goes, yeah, so it's like, this is the benefits and blah, blah, blah. It's 2 weeks vacation each year and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I'd just been off for like a month and a half, like kind of recuperating from my last restaurant job. And I was just like, man, I just slept for 2 weeks. Like how 2 weeks out of 52 is nothing. Like I gotta find a better situation than working all the damn time. So this was kind of my thing. Like, okay, I can hustle for 9 months and have solid time off. Cause that's where I really thrive. I'm too routine oriented to like enjoy weekends or my one day off or whatever. So I enjoy it when I have them, but I'd like to just like stop doing things for a little bit, but we'll see. I don't know. I hope it works out, but you know, it's an expensive business too. So I got to figure out how to make it all balance.
Yeah. Same here. I know what you're saying, but I mean, I think everyone's so caught up in this work thing, you know, it's like with the personal chef business, I don't work 5 days a week and I sure as heck don't work like 80 hours a week. And I still catch some flack from a lot of restaurant chefs like, oh, must be nice to work 3 days a week. And that, you know, that kind of nonsense
is like, well, and then you say it is. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Like I've got family, I've got a wife, I've got kids, I've got things I want to do. Yeah. Like I went out and did a party on Friday and made $2,000 in a day. Like don't hate because you're right. $15 an hour jobs. Like you chose that. There are options out there.
But the thing is, and as I was, when I was a chef, I was the biggest one of those people, whatever you call them. And now it makes me sick. Cause it's like, I don't know who told us that we were supposed to work all the damn time. And that's what life is supposed to be like. But I don't want that anymore. Like that was a big part of this for me. I am the number one workaholic type of person. It's disgusting. Like I can just forget about everything else and just work. And I needed that winter time. Like at this point, I don't know that I could have kept doing things at the pace I was doing them, because you just end up like that. Like, oh yeah, wish I could work that long. I'm like, well, you could. It's just what you see as successful, what you deem as successful or having a life or whatever. If you want to be the best chef and have Michelin stars and whatever, go fly across the country to do events, then great, enjoy it. But you're going to be busy and tired and miserable all the time. But if you want to build a life for yourself that works for you, and then you can have your family or whatever and travel and do whatever you want to do, isn't that what life is about actually? And not making money and being like getting awards and accolades and all that shit. Like, I don't know. For me, the farming, like there isn't like a greatest farm award or like a Michelin star for farms. And like, that's what's so great about it. It's just like, I get my award when people buy my products and keep coming back for them because they like them so much. That's rewarding to me. And yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's also at the end of the day, it's gardening. So if it rains on a day that I'm supposed to work, I just like take the day off. Like, I know there's a lot of farmers will be like, what? Are you crazy? Get your rain gear out. And that's fine for them, but I'm not that serious about it. I don't want to be sopping wet. I don't want to be, you know, working 7 days a week for the whole summer. Like I take a day off here and there. Sometimes I don't, but the whole point is just to work less eventually.
If you can find something you love and it pays the bills, then I say go do that.
Right. And that's the thing. And like, I can make, like this year I'm slated to make almost as much as I made when I was a chef, and I'm going to do it in 9 months. So like for salary, not even, that's not gross sales. That's like after expenses. So like, I don't know how you argue with that. Like, and if you love doing it on top of it, then great. I get to spend every day with my dog. Like my neighbors are like, where do you go with your dog every day? What do you do for a living? I'm like, oh, she just runs around and chases rabbits all day. Like, it's great. For every day that's rainy and cold or too hot or whatever, there's 10 days that are 70 degrees and slightly breezy and like a nice, like sunny day. Like it feels like when you're farming. So it's like, it's just nice being outside and working in the soil.
Have you ever thought of doing anything outside of the food business? If you weren't working on a farm, if it wasn't a restaurant, do you have any secret jobs that you would want to be doing?
I think so. I mean, for me, everything's food. Like my coworker said, we should be flower farmers. And I was like, I'm just not interested in that. Like I can do it. I grow flowers and I deliver flowers to people's house now. And I like to do it. And you can't do it without smiling, because it's just like a nice thing to make a bouquet and harvest flowers and all that stuff. But like 10 to 15 bouquets twice a week is plenty for me. I don't need to make that my whole life. Food is the most important thing. And like, and for me at the end of the day, if I can't sell it, at least I can eat it. So like, I'm not going to starve to death. And that to me is, I mean, that kind of security is really important, especially in today's age where like grocery shelves are empty and like, you know, you can get sick if you go to the grocery store. Like growing food is like the most important thing right now, for fun and for like being a little bit more like anti-fragile in my lifestyle.
So I want to throw some rapid fire questions at you. Are you ready for that?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So I always ask people kind of like what their favorite foods are and stuff. For you, I'd like to say, do you have favorite vegetables? What are you really into? And anything especially interesting that maybe our listeners haven't had, or I don't know.
So you mean to cook or to grow?
Either or both.
That's a good question. I love okra. I'm a sucker for okra. And it gets a bad rap. It's one of those things that's super polarizing, but I maintain that people just don't know how to do it. If you just take a bite of it and you're worried about that slimy texture, yeah, it's gonna get you. But like, if you make anything that's saucy or stewy, or like now okra and tomatoes come out together. If you're not putting a couple of okras in your salsa or tomato salad or whatever, then you're not doing it right. Cause that watery run that you get on your plate, like, goes away. It just becomes one cohesive thing when you mix okra into it. And like, I put it in all my soups and stews because it makes it just have like such a heartier texture. I fry it for fun. Like I just love it. It's one of those things that like people don't give enough of a chance because of the texture. Yeah. But I grow a red and a green variety of okra and I mix them together. So it really makes it, I think, even more fun for me at least. And then hopefully for when people are like, oh, cause like the people who nobody's just like, oh, I kind of like okra. It's either I hate that stuff or that's my favorite thing. So people then who are like, this is my favorite thing. And they're like, ooh, red okra too. This is super cool. Like it really has that extra level of like, oh, this is awesome. So yeah, I'd say that's probably the one.
I've never seen red okra before.
Yeah, it's super cool. And it stays red when you cook it too, unlike like purple green beans, which turn white or turn green when you cook them. Like the red okra, burgundy okra, I think it's called, stays red, and it's really fun.
Really cool. My kids just discovered pickled okra a couple of weeks ago, and they could, like, we eat everything pickled in the summer, you know, especially having kids who don't necessarily love vegetables. I find if I just pickle something, they'll eat it. So every night we have like a pickle plate on the table. Tonight,
that's awesome. Said,
tonight it was cucumbers because I'm growing the row 7 cucumbers, which I'm pulling 11 cucumbers a week off of one bush.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's only so many things you can do with them. And those ones are pretty cool. I've grilled them up before. But just I'll pickle a batch of that, pickle a batch of cauliflower. So we try and have pickles on the table every night.
Awesome. And is that row 7 cucumbers, like that bush, like stays with you for a while? When did you start the other?
So it went, we are probably 3 weeks of harvesting cucumbers at this point. Like it started slow and now we're kind of in peak. And right now I have like 5 of them hanging out there. So we literally just pulled 11 off in the past 3 days. And now I have like 5 more, and that's coming off of one plant.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Do you have any resources for people who want to maybe get into like gardening, maybe not farming on your scale, but if someone has a little plot of land in their backyard that they just want to do, where should they look? Are there websites, books, Instagram accounts, just to kind of turn people on, or any advice that you actually have that would be really good?
Yeah, I mean, the best advice was a farmer friend of mine who runs an organic farm out in Virginia, he was just like, just get your hands in the dirt and start doing it. It'll probably work out. And that was really like the kick in the butt. I needed to just like do it. But that for me, it's just like, yeah, just get out there and try it. But as far as like physical resources, YouTube is a great place for gardening or like even like the small scale farming. Like they have a lot of great pointers to kind of manage weeds effectively and that sort of thing. And like manage growth and trellising in an efficient way. Whereas like a lot of the stuff you buy at a garden center is crappy and like takes more time than it's worth. And it's really expensive. So, cause like, I don't know how much one of those tomato cages costs, but they're only 4 feet tall. And then like my cherry tomatoes right now are 10 feet tall. Like, there's no tomato cage built to handle that sort of thing. So there's YouTube, there's a guy called Curtis Stone who does like, you know, he was like a major inspiration in my farming at least. And he does like small scale farming in people's backyards. He like rents people's backyards from them and then turns them into like little micro farms and uses that as like his business. And then Jesse Frost, so that's the Rough Draft Farmstead or No Till Growers. They do really great, and he's really funny too, really great videos of like starting a farm or just growing tips or like this is what I'm trialing and all that sort of thing. And then, I don't know much about gardening except Charles Dowding, who's an English guy. He does some really great gardening videos out where he's at. And he's been doing organic no-dig gardens since like the 80s, so he knows his stuff. And but the internet is probably the best bet. As far as books, like there's a few farming books, but I don't have much in the way of gardening books. I don't spend a lot of time in that realm because it's not efficient enough for me. There's not enough, like I have to do things in rows. I have to like make sure that my weeds are managed in 40-foot stretches, not in a 10 by 10. Because to me that sounds like, I mean, it would take 5 minutes each day to pull them. So that sounds fine.
This year there was a run on tomato cages as well. So we had to modify some stuff on our own at home. I guess, you know, everyone's gardening this year, which is great. I'm so glad. But I called like four places in town and none of them had them. And one guy actually laughed at me and said, huh, like, we're not getting any more in this year. So yeah. Figuring out how to do it without that. But yeah, I mean, I have a couple cages and my plants have already grown out of them. It's ridiculous. The cage isn't doing that much. So
no, I mean, it's fine for like when they first try to flop over, but otherwise it's a waste. In my home garden when I was just gardening, I would do like kind of imagine like a soccer goal frame, but smaller, like, you know, 6 feet tall with like 2x4s and just like a big, you know, two going up and down and one across the top and then tie strings from it. And the tomatoes will just hang off the strings. And you kind of have to go and twist them up, but that holds them up well enough. And that's what I do at the farm too. But, you know, we have 1,000 tomato plants, so it just takes a lot more time.
That's a lot of tomato plants.
Yeah. It's more than I've ever grown at one time for sure, but it's been great. It took a good amount of time to get all the strings tied and all of them pruned, but now they're churning.
How do you pick what varieties you want to grow? Are you experimenting every year with different things, or have you found things that just work and you're sticking with those?
A mix of both. So depends on the plant. Like I really like growing. So like I said, I have a small scale, so I can't experiment too much. I kind of have to find what works. And like, these are carrots, these are scallions, these are tomatoes, and just kind of go with it. But yeah, I do a little bit of experimenting each year to make sure I'm not just like kind of repeating the same thing, but I always grow sun gold tomatoes because they're the best. And those are like restaurant quality, like orange cherry tomatoes that are just, they have the most, like, they're just the sweetest tomatoes on the planet. And they're hyper productive too, which is great on our end. And then I grow, basically I think of it from like the back end. So I'm like, okay, if I'm at a farmer's market, I want to have a mix of cherry tomatoes. So I know I'm going to grow the sun golds because they taste the best. So that I have my give it to a customer, they will buy it kind of thing. Like this, if you eat this, you will love this. And then I have the, like, then so you need a red cherry tomato. And then like I also put in some yellow grape cherry tomatoes just for color. I don't think I'll grow them again, but they're not bad. They're just not as productive as I like, and they split and all kinds of stuff. So I think, basically I just look at it like what a mix looks like and say, okay, red, yellow, and orange, that's a good mix. And there's a couple different sizes and shapes in there. And then heirloom tomatoes, I go straight up like on yield. I just like pick the heirloom tomatoes that yield the most. And I don't know how I feel about that this year, but it's better than last year, so I guess I can't complain. And then with everything else, it's like, you know, some veggies, there's some varieties take a little bit less time, some take more time, some are more uniform, some have better flavor. So it's just kind of guessing and talking to other farmers what varieties they like and just going from there. So I know I have like my scallions, I know I love the variety that I grow, but like, and the carrots, I know I love the variety I grow, but I'm not sold on the radish varieties I grow. I'm not sold on the spinach varieties I grow, like lettuce varieties I think I'm getting comfortable with. But yeah, it's kind of just like over time. And then it's always experiments, like, you know, and having fun with stuff, because you got to keep it interesting, right? Like you can't cook the same dish every day. You got to change it up. And so that's kind of like, oh yeah, this row was really cool. And I have like this special product this year, for this 1 or 2 weeks only, but, and maybe next year I'll grow more, but for the most part, I kind of want to, in my situation, I can't afford to like lose all my crops. So like, I have to make sure that like, okay, I know I can grow the parade scallions every time perfectly. So that's what we're going to grow. So it's kind of a mix of like safety and kind of experimentation.
That makes sense for sure.
Yeah.
So do you have anything you want to add before we get out of here today?
I don't think so. I hope I didn't poo-poo restaurants too bad. They gave me everything in my life and they're putting me where I am now, but I just can't do it anymore.
This is the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast. It's okay. So many of our listeners are here because they're not interested in working in restaurants. So we totally understand. We got your back.
Yeah. And then I guess the only other thing would be a plug. Like if you're in the Frederick area or DC area, head to the website and we'll deliver food right to your house.
And the show notes, we have links to websites, social media, all of that. We'll tag the business when the podcast is released so people will know where to find you.
Awesome. Cool. That sounds great.
Cool. Well, thank you. And to all our listeners, this has been the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast. As always, you can find us at chefswithoutrestaurants.com and .org and on all social media platforms. Thanks so much and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast. And if you're interested in being a guest on the show or sponsoring a show, please let us know. We can be reached at chefswithoutrestaurants@gmail.com. Thanks so much.